Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elton.
And I'm Ken Rudin in Vermilion, South Dakota.
And we are not making this up. You are truly in South Dakota.
I am. I'm at the Carl Mundt Film Festival.
And that is actually an event that takes place in Vermilion, if I'm not mistaken.
It does. It's either every year or it's annually. They're not sure here.
But America wants to know, where is Vermilion and how is the weather there, Ken?
Well, the weather is not bad. And actually, the reason I'm in South Dakota is because I need to be among my peers. I have no more South Dakota jokes.
That's pretty much the list.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing because we need to save a little time in this podcast to talk about the 21st Democratic debate between Democratic candidates for president. It happened quite recently. And Ken, between the two, which one do you think really connected? Which one do you think really impressed America? Do you think it was Charlie Gibson or George Stephanopoulos?
I was just going to say that. I don't mean to be short, but... when there was a debate every 5 minutes, it seemed like, and people were saying, okay, enough already. But this is the first debate since February 26th. A lot has happened, everything from Jeremiah Wright to Obama's speech on race at Philadelphia to Hillary Clinton getting attacked at the tarmac from your ex-girlfriend.
To the tarmac. So clearly the motivation then for ABC was to try to go through all the hot buttons that have arisen or gotten hot during that long period of time. And they spent the entire first hour of the debate going over more or less the gaps, the moments of embarrassment, the weaknesses, the vulnerabilities that have emerged for both candidates during that period of time.
And even though they both have made mistakes in that period of time, they both have vulnerabilities, it seemed like Barack Obama clearly was on the defensive more often than Hillary Clinton. When Hillary Clinton made a gaffe, she said, well, you know, we all make mistakes. But when we were talking about the Barack Obama mistakes, and there were a bunch of them, everything from the bitter comment.
Did you feel as though they aimed more of their tough questions at Barack Obama in that first hour?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I did read the newspapers after the debate, which I sometimes do, and it seemed like the analyses I read was that Stephanopoulos and Gibson were both tougher on Barack Obama than they were on Hillary. I thought it's actually a good debate and fair questions. I think perhaps maybe the reason Obama seemed to be on the defensive more was because his controversies have been in the news more. I mean, the Tulsa tarmac thing, while it's out there, it's been out there several weeks ago. Whereas the bitter comment and about why blue-collar voters, socially conservative voters, embrace guns and religion and things like that is because of just bitterness. And I think that's what the campaigns have been sparring over the last couple of days. And that's why it seemed like Barack Obama got the brunt of it.
But they did take a hard shot at Hillary Clinton with respect to the way she had presented this incident in Bosnia. And they seemed to be trying to push her to admit that this had been a fiction and that she had known it was a fiction. And they eventually got her to say this.
You can go back for the past 15 months. We both have said things that, you know, turned out not to be accurate. You know, that happens when you're talking as much as we have talked. But, you know, I'm very sorry that I said it. And I have said that, you know, it just didn't jive with what I had written about and knew to be the truth.
Okay, so it didn't jibe with what she knew to be the truth.
Boy, is that Clinton-esque or what?
Is that another way of saying it was not true?
Well, that's what it sounded like. And what was interesting is that that whole conversation was prefaced by the point that a new poll shows that 6 in 10 people do not trust Hillary Clinton. They don't feel she's honest. And here comes, you know, the whopper about being under sniper fire in Bosnia in 1996. And it was just part of the explanation that Hillary Clinton tried to explain away. But I just thought it was interesting that when Barack Obama tries to explain what he meant by the bitter comment or what he meant, what he tried to say about his relationship with Bill Ayers of the Weather Underground, and we'll talk about that in a minute, or Jeremiah Wright, Hillary Clinton would not accept any of his explanations for what he meant. But when it was Hillary Clinton's turn to explain what she meant, she said, well, you know, we all make mistakes.
And you're right. She did push back each time that he tried to give an explanation. She wouldn't accept it. But didn't he invite that to some degree with the rather halting and hesitating way that he offered those explanations?
I have never said that I don't wear flag pins or refuse to wear flag pins. This is the kind of manufactured issue that our politics has become obsessed with and once again distracts us from what should be my job when I'm commander in chief, which is going to be figuring out how we get our troops out of Iraq and how we actually make our economy better for the American people.
Now, I don't think that it's necessarily the biggest deal in the world whether he wears a flag pin or not, but you would think that by this juncture in the campaign, he would have more of a deft and glib answer, something that didn't sound quite so much like he was making it up as he went along.
Although it's tough to be glib about the American flag. Remember, I roll my eyes at thinking about this. One of the big issues in the 1988 campaign between senior George Bush and Michael Dukakis was the Pledge of Allegiance and whether Michael Dukakis, as governor of Massachusetts, either vetoed it or didn't promote it or whatever. And you say, of all the things that voters care about, is that something that sticks? But that really stuck. That's one of the things that helped end the Michael Dukakis
momentum. Yeah, exactly.
Well, he did. He came out of the Atlanta convention in 88 with a 17-point lead, and I think he lost it 2 days later.
And I do think you're right that the Bush campaign in 1988 was notorious for having raised a lot of issues that many people on the Democratic side said were superfluous, but which
ACLU, remember?
That's
ACLU.
Right, a card-carrying member of the ACLU.
Right.
And many Democrats tried to dismiss those arguments, but they did seem to connect with a certain kind of American voter. That kind of American voter has not disappeared in the last 20 years. It certainly is something that's going to come up again, and as Hillary Clinton kept saying in the debate, this is what the Republicans are going to talk about. In fact, it actually seemed as though Hillary were channeling the Republicans at several points in the debate. I think she made multiple references to 9/11, five if I'm not mistaken. Let's listen to how all of that kind of sounded.
To have given his first sermon after 9/11, published on 9/11, he made light of 9/11, continued after 9/11, and after so much more dependent on foreign oil today than we were on 9/11.
What do you think, Ken? Was that break Rudy Giuliani's record for citing 9/11?
Look how both Obama and Hillary Clinton were dealt with the gun issue. As I recall, when Hillary Clinton ran for the Senate in 2000 in New York, she was really for strict gun control. Barack Obama has filled out questionnaires when he ran for the state Senate in Illinois saying he wants to ban the manufacture and sale of handguns. And yet they couldn't even say those words when they were pressed on it in the debate this week.
No, they both discovered the Second Amendment. They're very much in favor of the Second Amendment now in Pennsylvania, which is, of course, one of the country's outstanding gun-loving states.
Well, of all the reasons why Al Gore lost in 2000, again, this is maybe revisionism, but they say that perhaps his views on guns hurt in states like West Virginia, things like that, that perhaps cost him the presidency.
Of course, his views on coal probably didn't help him in West Virginia very much either. Now, some of the hot buttons that the ABC commentators kept bringing up had to do with the horse race in its most naked form. For example, talking about whether or not these two candidates would be willing to be the vice presidential candidate for their rival, or whether they would be willing to offer that job to their rival were they the nominee. And this is what they had to say when Charlie Gibson tossed that one out and said,
"Why not?" Don't all speak at once.
Well, I'm happy to start with a response.
Okay, this was an idea that had come from former New York Governor Mario Cuomo, so I'll toss it to you, Ken. Why not?
Well, I think what Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton didn't say is that they hate each other's guts.
That's no bar to serving as vice president for someone,
right?
Or for having
right.
somebody be your vice president.
Right. We saw that with Kerry and Edwards in 2004, with Reagan and Bush in 1980,
Kennedy and Johnson.
And, of course, Polk and Hamlin. No, they didn't run.
Possibly even Eisenhower and Nixon, but we're not going to go there.
No.
And having disposed of the question of whether or not they wanted to be each other's running mate, they also had to deal with this past matter of whether or not they each think the other could beat John McCain in November. This has come up before.
Oh. Could we just go back to that one thought about the running mate?
I mean,
in the past, not too many weeks ago, Hillary Clinton said that she volunteered this, now that she's trailing in votes and delegates and states won, she said that Barack Obama would be a great running mate, and Bill Clinton was trying to pass that around. Once upon a time, they did look like they liked each other, even though it was a grudge, it was grudgingly so, but they didn't look like they even liked each other. A lot of times when Barack Obama was on the defensive, especially when Hillary Clinton was piling on, he had the expression like saying, "This is not the way politics should be." Now, let's be honest here, this is exactly what politics is, whether it should be like this or not. You can't go into a debate, especially with a Hillary Clinton, who the word is, and the word has always been, she will do whatever it takes to win. But if you're running for president, you should do whatever it takes to win. And it just seemed like Barack Obama was not prepared for that. And for him to not to be prepared for that in a debate with so much at stake seemed like he was just in almost like another world on that.
I agree. He did not seem to be ready for exactly the kind of questions that probably any journalist would at least consider asking in that first hour, and certainly they should have had some preparation for the most obvious ones. But there was one question that Hillary Clinton did not particularly want to be pressed on as well, besides the Tuzla tarmac incident, and that was her references to his inability to win the presidency were he the Democratic nominee. And George Stephanopoulos pressed hard to get an answer to whether or not she thought he could win.
But the question is, do you think Senator Obama can do that? Can he win?
Yes, yes, yes.
I'll have what she's having. I just think... Now, this, of course, gave Obama the opportunity to say that he has generously said that she was absolutely capable of beating John McCain, and he's said it many times. Where did this whole controversy come from?
It was a private conversation, apparently, between Hillary Clinton and Bill Richardson, where she told the New Mexico governor that, frankly, Barack Obama cannot win. And, of course, that private conversation got released.
By Bill Richardson,
and as part of the deep animus that both the Clintons have towards Richardson, because, as a matter of fact, Bill Clinton spent the entire Super Bowl with Bill Richardson hoping to win an endorsement there, and when it didn't come, I guess they felt very betrayed.
Well, especially when then some weeks later, Bill Richardson did come out and endorse Barack Obama.
In your question, though, when you mentioned beating John McCain, John McCain is, remind me again, who's that?
Well, exactly. John McCain has had a little trouble breaking through and getting his message out in these recent weeks because there's no more competition on the Republican side. He's the presumptive nominee. And while he goes around trying to unite the party behind him, raise some more money from big Republican donors, and make America notice that he is out there as the Republican nominee, he hasn't been making very much headway on any of those fronts.
Although he did have a major speech this week on the economy. Obviously, the economy is thought to be his weak spot that he's confessed in the past that he doesn't have a great,
shall we say, interest in.
I think that's clear. And yet, what we did hear from him this past week, well, I thought was interesting because he seemed to reverse some of the positions he's held in the past.
Such as?
Well, such as the making the Bush tax cuts permanent. And, of course, every conservative who doesn't like John McCain will remind everybody who listen that McCain voted against the 2001-2003 Bush tax cuts, although McCain says because he just didn't want deficit spending. But when he went on, McCain did not guarantee to have a balanced budget by the end of his term.
That's right. Again, he switched from being a balance-the-budget-type conservative to being a supply-side-type conservative. And in fairness to him, while he did vote against those tax cuts when they were passed, he has more recently been in favor of making them permanent because he says not to do so would be a tax increase at a time of apparent recession and that that would be a recessionary effect.
And again, you know, when you think of John McCain, you think that, well, of all the problems he has, you know, defending an unpopular war, an unpopular president, yet when you watch Clinton and Obama go at it day in and day out, and you wonder whether the party can get its act together to beat John McCain in the fall. Some polls show that perhaps 30% of Hillary Clinton supporters would not vote for Obama if he's a nominee and would switch to McCain, and maybe like 20% of Obama supporters would do the same thing.
That's or a at lot, least you know, just, they could just stay home. They wouldn't have to necessarily switch to McCain. I think Obama has supporters who would be more likely to just stay home, and Clinton has supporters who would be more likely to vote for McCain if the other rival were to get the Democratic nomination.
But in fairness, there are a lot of many Democrats who are concerned about these weak points about Barack Obama, about Jeremiah Wright, about the weather underground, about guns, about flag, about religion, whether he can reach out and get the votes of these so-called Reagan Democrats that it would be so crucial in states like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, things like that.
All of which, of course, is the argument for finding some way to make Hillary Clinton the nominee and not Barack Obama, no matter how well he does in terms of winning more states, more votes, and more pledged delegates. But is that an argument you could really make, just as you just made it, with respect to the convention or in a debate or in you were making a speech as the candidate Hillary Clinton?
Well, more and more people. And the latest, I guess, is Barney Frank, who is a Hillary Clinton supporter, a brother of Ann Lewis, a longtime Hillary Clinton strategist, who said, look, when all is said and done on June 3rd, let's see who has the most delegates. And whoever that is, the other person should drop out of the race. And most people feel there's no way that Hillary Clinton could surpass Barack Obama by June 3rd without the support of all these undeclared superdelegates.
So do you then anticipate that those Democrats who don't like Barack Obama or who have the kind of problems that you've just been describing with some of his associations, if not with his own statements and ideas, those people are going to swallow hard and close ranks, as Democrats have usually done in the past, as Republicans usually do? Or do you really believe they're going to desert en masse, as many Democrats did, say, in 1972 with George McGovern?
Well, I think a lot has to do with the 9 contests that come after Pennsylvania. If Barack Obama can right his ship and, you know, appeal to all these new voters, these young voters, make sure there's still a strong African-American turnout, although aside from North Carolina and perhaps parts of Kentucky, it's hard to make the case that there's much black vote out there in the remaining contests.
Well, I think Indiana's his better chance.
Indiana,
there, because
right,
you have
right.
Gary and Indianapolis to some degree, probably better right. even than Kentucky, which doesn't seem to be turning an ear to Barack Obama thus far yet at all. Even if he wins more than he's expected to win, in fact, even if he were to pull off an utterly unexpected upset in Pennsylvania and beat her there, putting enormous pressure on her to pull out, none of those things would address any of the concerns that you just raised. Democrats are still going to have to wrestle with all those challenges, even if he becomes a stronger nominee in terms of votes and primary performance than anyone anticipates.
And I think that's why Mike Gravel made a fatal mistake by getting out of the race as soon as he did.
Terrible mistake.
Absolutely. Because
his moment is here.
He could have taken advantage of that. You know, if they can't decide between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, who else but Mike? You know,
Mike would be the answer. I would think, if not Hillary, if not Barack, then Mike.
Like Mike, if I could be like Mike,
I want to be like Mike.
Like Mike.
That's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR News.
Just one day, if I could be that way, I'd do my move.
I'll have what she's having.